Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime. We got Get a Grip coming your way in about 60 minutes, but as we continue to break down the possibilities of a Cavs offseason, we head out to the Wise Heart Right. We Make It Right. Call Kyle Wright Hotline. You can find all his work over there at cleveland.com. Our good friend Ethan Sands joining us now. Ethan, what's going on?
What's going on, buddy? How you doing tonight?
We're doing pretty good. Obviously, a lot of things floating around. So social media has been my phone just blows up every 3 seconds, and I got Ja going to Portland. I got people bouncing around. I mean, this is kind of the least fun part of the off season, right?
I think it's the most fun, right? Because everything changes. Everything where we get to see how the NBA, not just the Eastern Conference, is going to be reconstructed, is going to be restructured after this offseason. So I think it'll be interesting. We've had a lot of decent moves already, and now it's time to see if the Cleveland Cavaliers can match it, make it, or break it.
I want to ask you about something away from Cleveland really quick to start things off. Golden State's trying to build like a decade too old core four between Steph, maybe Draymond, LeBron, and then AD is a package deal. What should be kind of the initial reaction if LeBron goes to Golden State and that ends up being the core four?
The initial reaction for Cavs fans is, what are you doing? Like, I honestly think when you think about all that went down between Golden State and Cleveland over those years where the Cavaliers were going to the NBA Finals consecutively, that was one of the biggest, if not the biggest, rivalry in the NBA. And now you're telling me that you're going to end your career alongside the guy that prevented you from bringing back multiple championships to the city that you grew up in and love and all these other things. But the other thing is, for basketball fans, you want to see what they're capable of. We've understood that they played alongside one another in the Olympics for Team USA and all these things and how great they were as a pairing. But alongside Anthony Davis, then you throw in some other ancillary pieces. I think it's interesting for the NBA, not to say that they're going to be competing with San Antonio and OKC and all the like, but I do think that although they are older, although they still are trying to prove that they have basketball left to be played, this is a situation where basketball could be better for it because we don't know what it's going to look like and have never seen a core four built around this age of and caliber of players as well.
People talk about the fact that they say it damages LeBron, his legacy. Does that in any way you think hold any truth to it?
I don't think it damages his legacy. He's still going to be considered one of the best players to ever touch a basketball. You really can't take that away from him based on the team that he plays for. And obviously you can't take away the championships, the MVPs, all the accolades that he has. So I think this would just be another chapter in his story. Would you rather him end his career being a Cleveland Cavalier? Sure, storybook. But also I think there's a villain aspect to it that could also be plugged and played into the end of his story as well. So I just think it's interesting. I don't really have a biased take on it from either perspective, to be honest with you.
Do you think the Cavs fan have to give up sort of any hope that they have of LeBron and the idea of a homecoming, or is that still alive to you?
I think they're still alive, right? It's never say never until any deal is officially done. And obviously him being in Cleveland this past weekend definitely helps that narrative, him driving around, him being at golf courses, becoming members at golf courses. That all helps the narrative of him potentially coming back to Cleveland. But also we understand how difficult it would be for the Cleveland Cavaliers to acquire LeBron James, potentially through sign and trade, potentially through giving up Jared Allen and all these other things. But I think there is a possibility that it can still happen. We cannot be sure until anything is finalized.
All right, we saw James Harden today decline his player option. It was the expected move. The expectation is a multi-year deal where he takes a little bit less money. I don't know how many Cavs fans are really happy with James Harden right now. Is this a move that you think should have people kind of changing their opinions, not necessarily on him as a player, but the way that he fits onto the team in the roster now?
I think you understand that there are few players around the NBA that can do what James Harden does at his caliber, at his veteran experience, having seen as much as he has around the NBA throughout his tenure throughout the league. I think it's important to remember that although he'll be 36, 37 years old next year, he is still one of the best point guards in the league based on his ability to score the basketball, ability to pass the basketball, ability to manipulate defenses, and the geometry of the floor. There's all these pieces that aren't being taken into account for Cavs fans. And I think there's an understanding, sure, he's getting older. Should you want a younger core? Yes. Do you want someone to build around for the future? Why are you putting all eggs into this next year? It's all understandable. But you also have to view it from the point of, who else would you replace him with? And who else is going to do what James Harden can do, especially when it comes to alleviating pressure from Donovan Mitchell and not being an undersized guard? Because, of course, James Harden is 6'5", and the Cavs have been playing with an undersized backcourt for a majority of the tenure of Donovan Mitchell in Cleveland. So having James Harden also helps in that aspect as well. So I think it's important to keep an eye on what version of James Harden the Cavs are going to get, and how his summer looks throughout playing more time with Donovan Mitchell throughout the summer, training camp, and all these things. But James Harden, although 36-37, is going to be a critical piece for this Cleveland Cavaliers team coming into this next season.
And again, Ethan Sands with us on the hotline. Ethan, back on that, I mean, James Harden, obviously not a ton of games here played in the regular season. The playoffs did not go the way that Cavs fans were hoping they did. How much of that is just the severe lack of time that this team played together? And do you think that there is a massive step forward that James Harden can still take with the Cavs?
I think we have to recognize that there has been one team since the NBA-ABA merger that has made a significant trade for an all-NBA caliber team at the trade deadline that ended up winning the championship that same year. One since the NBA-ABA merger, right? So understanding that James Harden coming into the new system with Kenny Atkinson, and sure, the Cavs wanted to say that they didn't have to change their system around James Harden. That wasn't true, right? We saw how their pace of play drastically changed when James Harden came to the roster. They were better off in the playoffs with James Harden as well. Sure, he didn't have a great series against the New York Knicks, but I agree with Kenny Atkinson and the organization that the Cavs might have struggled to get past the Toronto Raptors and the Detroit Pistons should James Harden not have been on the roster at all as well, because of his size, because of his passing ability and scoring ability and all these things that we've talked about already. But I do think that James Harden doesn't necessarily have a new level to get to for him, but he has a better understanding of the roster around him and those players around him have a better understanding of his game and how they can be beneficial. Plus, understanding what version offensively that Kenny Atkinson and that core roster pieces work best at, like when they're in motion rather than being stagnant and waiting till 5 or 7 seconds are left on the shot clock to initiate an offensive sequence with James Harden handling the ball. So alleviating and helping Max Strus and Sam Merrill still be able to move off the ball, cutting, screening, all these things, that was harder because they were changing their system to help James Harden fit in better. Now they have this entire offseason to help themselves recognize what version of themselves offensively is best and how they can get everybody into the best situations for success for this Cavs roster.
Ethan, you mentioned Max Strus. Obviously, Cavs need to get under the second apron this year, have to face the multitude of penalties that come around with being a second-year, second-apron team. Max Strus, obviously a relatively large contract for one of the role players. Do you see a way they stay under the apron and keep him on the roster?
It's difficult to say, right, because he is such a big piece to the emotional leadership of this group, and obviously Kenny Atkinson loves having him as one of his key pieces, whether that's in the starting unit or off the bench. He's seen winning plays from Max Strus. Also, I think we have to remember that Max Strus missed the first 67 games of last season and still had an impact in the postseason and all these things. But when you're talking about the financial restrictions that the Cavs have to deal with, Max Strus is one of the guys that we've heard that the Cleveland Cavaliers are trying to figure out if he's best suited as a piece in a trade or if they can keep him on the roster and make moves around the margins to get under that second apron. Because as you mentioned, there are so many penalties and restrictions that come with being a second-year, second-apron team. So whether or not they keep Dennis Schroeder, Keon Ellis, Dean Wade, those are other players that are also on the margins of helping them get under that second apron, and as well as James Harden taking less money over the next 2 to 3 years, whatever the multi-year deal will end up being, is extremely important for doing so as well.
Are you looking at a potential addition? The Atlanta Hawks declined Jonathan Kuminga's $24 million team option, making him a free agent. There's rumors floating around. Cavs are showing maybe a little bit of interest. Is that a player that should get fans excited?
I think he is, right? Because as you look at it, and I mentioned Dean Wade there recently. Dean Wade is the only wing size player that the Cavs have over 6'6", which if you were to add Jonathan Kuminga, he would be the other one, right? Naquan Tomlin's still trying to come into his own. But when you look at the statistics of what Jonathan Kuminga has been able to do, a career 33.2% three-point shooter on 2.4 attempts per game, 50% from the field, but also the defensive end of the floor. That's what the Cavs have been missing and trying to find, a two-way wing that is capable of defending an opposing team's best player while also having more production on the offensive end of the floor. Does he move the needle for me the same way that some of these other free agents or some of these other bigger trades would have? I'm going to say no, but there's always the hope that a new player can invigorate something different that the Cavs have been lacking and have needed in their chase for a championship.
All right, Ethan, I mean, one of the major, I'm not alone in this, but one of the major things that I've picked on when it comes to Kobe Altman's roster building is that it seems like a lot of the players he brings in, there's overlap. Like Max Strus, Sam Merrill, Keon Ellis feel to have a very similar role on the floor. Is it necessary for Kobe to kind of diversify the way that the roster looks and get a lot more players who maybe don't have as many overlapping skill sets in this offseason?
I can say that there's a necessity for that, right? And I can be in agreement with you, but whether or not Kobe Altman actually does it is completely up to the front office, right? We continue to have this conversation about the guard room and the guard depth that the Cavs have. You can talk about Donovan Mitchell, Max Strus, Sam Merrill, Malik Thomas. You can talk about Jalen Tyson. You have Tyrese Proctor, Craig Porter Jr. There is a lengthy list of guards that are going to be battling it out for these second and third positions behind James Harden and Donovan Mitchell as well. And it's difficult to say why the Cavs continue to draft for best player available, or rather than fifth fit. Obviously, 34th in the draft is difficult to find fit, but there was front court depth there. And we also understand that Thomas Bryant is coming back on a one-year veteran minimum deal again, but what is he bringing of value other than just saying you have some kind of backcourt or front court depth, excuse me? Because we know he only played in 9 of 18 playoff games while playing in 60 regular season games. So if you're not going to trust a player that you deemed one of the best offseason acquisitions last year to play in the postseason, then why is he coming back and what value does he truly have? I like Thomas Bryant's game, but whether or not the front office and Kenny Atkinson are going to utilize him in the postseason is a different story, as well as why they have such a depleted wing depth room when relying on undersized wings such as Keon Ellis, Max Strus, and the like of those players. We understand that they need more of those and a bigger size of those to kind of battle it out in the Eastern Conference, especially against teams like Boston, Atlanta, you name it. There are teams that are going to be difficult for them to play against, especially the New York Knicks, as we saw in that 4-game series in the Eastern Conference Finals, for them to get to a different level. And yet the Cavs continuously fail to acquire or draft players of that size or that ilk.
And again, Ethan Sands with us on the hotline. All right, Ethan, you mentioned it. I mean, it's one thing for us to say it. It's another for Kobe to go out and do it. I mean, do we feel like this is a changed Kobe Altman, or do you have a feeling more of this offseason that it is going to be a lot of the same roster back and, I mean, a lot of the same problems that the Cavs have run into in the past?
As of right now, I have a feeling that the Cavs are trying to get stuff down, trying to get stuff done, but obviously there are other teams in the works and trying to also get their wishes met, right? And I'm not saying that Kobe Altman's on the hot seat. I believe Kobe Altman has built up equity throughout the organization with Dan Gilbert as well, and having been one of the only president of basketball operations to get multiple extended contracts within the organization, that is held true. But the understanding is this Cavs roster is not built to win a championship in a year that you have championship expectations. So you need to make moves. You need to make larger moves, and you might miss out on two of the biggest fish that could ever be on the market in Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's already on his way to Miami, and Jaylen Brown, as he's in the likes for being traded from the Boston Celtics as well. So although you might have an attachment to some of these players that you might have drafted, you might have an attachment to the future of this roster, the future of this team, if you're on the timeline of Donovan Mitchell, which I believe this Cavs team still is, you have one more year of a guaranteed contract before Donovan Mitchell has the potential to walk freely without getting anything in return. So you have to go all in this season, all or nothing this season. And yes, that means championship or bust this season.
Ethan, how many players on this team should be untouchable this offseason?
None, to be honest with you. And in my opinion, none of them should be untouchable, but that's not how the organization sees it.
I mean, obviously that includes Donovan. Is this, when we talk about Jaylen Brown, obviously a name we just mentioned, I mean, would you have a preference to, if you were able to bring him in, if it turned out to be, it either took Evan or Donovan, would you have a preference in which way to go?
My preference would be you would be able to give up Donovan Mitchell for Jaylen Brown. But the point of why Jaylen Brown would be being traded is the Cavs would not, the Boston Celtics would not want Donovan Mitchell in return. They would want Evan Mobley, right? And the Cavs would want to pair Jaylen Brown with Donovan Mitchell and all these things. So the only pathway forward for the Cavs to acquire Jaylen Brown is by giving up Evan Mobley. And I do not know if this organization is willing or ready to part ways with Evan Mobley, particularly knowing that he's their safety net going into the potential Donovan Mitchell-less Cavaliers organization franchise that is potentially coming in the next few years.
All right, Ethan, have you identified, maybe more on the margins, aligned with the way that the Cavs are thinking right now, players that have kind of been floated around, a couple of guys declining options today, anybody that stands out to you that the Cavs should be targeting?
I think the free agent market is going to be interesting, right? Because of all these players that are getting declined, because of all these players that are in the free agent market. But I'm not sure that the Cavs have enough that would entice these even free agent guys looking for just a bare minimum contract to continue their sentence in the league, but also understanding that they have to have money in reserve to ensure that they bring Dean Wade back, right? Or ensure that they can get Keon Ellis back and all these other things. So the Cavs need to make their own moves first and determine who is coming back before they can entirely put their eggs into the basket of going and getting players on the free agent market. And again, I've mentioned that the Cavs have now, with James Harden potentially re-signing a new contract, with Thomas Bryant coming back, and then Malik Thomas likely to sign a standard NBA deal, the Cavs basically have one slot left of their 15, because they usually save that 15th slot for later into the season based on whether that's they bring up a two-way contract, whether that's they make someone in the buyout market, all these things. So understanding that they are also very short on roster positioning, that it would be hard to say that they make one move in the free agent market and that would make them exponentially better, right? Because you're on the free agent market for a reason. So I do think that there are some interesting and intriguing pieces that have been declined, as we talked about with Jonathan Kuminga, but also understanding that one move might not be the answer unless the Cavs are willing to make one of these heftier trades that we talked about on this show.
All right, Ethan, you gave us a lot to think about. You know, I always appreciate you setting aside the time and giving us some Cavs to talk about throughout this offseason. So I appreciate you a ton and look forward to talking to you as the offseason rolls on.
Thank you, Jake. I appreciate you having me on. Look forward to talking to you more soon.
Yep, no doubt. Ethan Sands, Cleveland.com, with us there on the Why Start Right, We Make It Right. Call Kyle Wright hotline. We'll react to what he had to say. And as we take a look into the James Harden decline of his player option, is him taking less money enough to make you change your opinion on him at all? That's coming your way in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Vaughn.
No, no.
Just got done talking to Ethan Sands of Cleveland.com. All things Cavs offseason as the NBA offseason has gotten underway. If you missed it, it'll be up over at 923thefan.com as well. You missed any moment from the show, use the rewind feature on the Odyssey app. Powered by Integrated Restoration, your local experts in water, fire, and storm disaster restoration. I mean, obviously really good stuff out of Ethan, as he always gives us, but he... a lot kind of sitting there along free agency. Obviously, a Jonathan Kuminga discussion, an overall Cavs discussion, which Ethan's not shy to the way that this team operates, not shy to the way that we have talked about the way this team operates. We're in agreement. Like, the Cavs need to make drastic change. There needs to be something to flip around the way that they have considered building the roster with the overlapping skill sets, with so many guys that have the same role. And it still feels right now that it's going to be difficult for the Cavs to get that done. There are so many things about the way this team operates that not only are they constricted on money, not only has Coby Holton put them in a complete hole with the amount of assets that they have to trade and move around, but it almost feels like a slight unwillingness, right? I mean, we had played a clip earlier talking about the Cavs being involved maybe in some Miles Bridges discussion before that trade occurred. We have reports of the Cavs potentially being interested in Jonathan Kuminga. So I don't know that it's a complete lack of trying, but when you talk about the lack of money, when you talk about the lack of assets, the lack of long-term security, the lack of championship-level success that exists on the team, it still feels like it's really difficult to get free agents to come here. It feels like it's difficult to be able to move around the money, to have guys to play on the roster, and the Cavs to still want to be attached to a lot of the guys that they've had on the team. They don't want to move off of Max Strus. They don't want to move off of Dean Wade. And yet it leaves you completely constricted when it comes to the money that you have, what you're able to move around. And it feels like it's a necessity. Again, I like the idea of Jonathan Kuminga. I do. Is it my favorite move on the planet? It's not going to get everybody excited. Do I think it brings you something different? Do I think it attaches a level of excitement to actually have a 6'6" or above player on the wing to guard somebody, to actually be able to put up 10 plus points a game? Yeah, I think that's really interesting. Like, there is a reason that Atlanta went through and declined that player option. It's because Jonathan Kuminga is worth nowhere near $24 million at the point in his career that he's at. It doesn't mean that he's useless on the roster either. But I want to go out to the phones really quick because Larry is in Elyria. I want to jump in on Jonathan Kuminga really quick. What's going on, Larry?
Yeah, I wouldn't do it.
Why not?
I mean, his percentage of shooting, I mean, 32-33% career-wise?
Yeah, right around 33.
I mean, what we need to do is come off the bench and he's got scores. And I mean, right now, as you mentioned, though, with not so many moves, when I heard you talk, John, I think, this is it. They got to break this team apart. That's what I'm looking at. They got to win it. I mean, if they don't, unless do you think their mindset, as long as you're competitive, is that good enough? Do you think that's what they're looking at?
I don't think so. I hope not. From so many of the people that have been around that locker room that has covered them in the offseason, I've heard nothing about this team being satisfied with where they're at least right when it comes to the players. I can't speak for the front office, right. But when it comes to Kenny Atkinson and where the players are at, they have a championship mindset, and I think that infects the entire building. I think everybody thinks that way. I just don't know that they think the correct way to get it done, Larry.
I'll tell you what, John, wherever the moves they make, they got a deep bench. And Coach Ashley has to play those guys. Mm-hmm. You can't go in there and basically tournament time for the playoffs and sit there and just reduce your roster. You got to let these kids play. If it's Proctor, and so even the kid we just drafted. I mean, they'll probably say, well, he's probably going to G League and they don't want a roster, but they definitely have to get deep. That's going to be the key. So make them all fair. And the thing, too, Jay, they have to play defense. I mean, they got to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the name of the game. They got their attitude this year is play defense and just some scoring. But right now, like you said, I hear where LeBron's going. For example, Golden State, I mean, and you're right, nobody wants to come here. The only way you get somebody to come here, you have to make a trade. That's the only way to get somebody here.
It feels that way, Larry, and I appreciate the call as always. There should be an interest in teams to go here. And we have reports out there that apparently, by the way, LeBron, Golden State, not really going to be happening. I believe Bobby Marks reporting it now that Golden State can't offer the full $15 million mid-level exception to LeBron because they brought back Kristaps Porzingis. I don't know if they can open up money a different way. I'm not sure if there's anything that they can do to adjust that. But it's interesting. But again, on the topic of the Cavs, there are so many things this team has to do right. There's so many things that they have to change. Roster building, I get it. Listen, I'm not going to stare at Kenny Atkinson and say you got to play 11 in the postseason. No team does that. It is usually shrink down to 8 or 9 guys for the most part. But it's, again, the way that you constructed your roster. There should be 11 players that probably play throughout the playoffs, even if in every single game you're playing about 8 or 9 guys. There should have been games where we saw more Jalen Tyson. There should have been games where we saw Keon Ellis. But everything always rolls back around to the idea that What's the difference of bringing in Jalen Tyson comparatively to Max Strus? Like, I mean, from a player perspective, what does Jalen Tyson do that Max can't right now? I would trust Max as a three-point shooter on any given night. I know that, you know, obviously Tyson shot it well this year. Still would trust Max in that situation in the playoffs. Defensively, Jalen Tyson's going to commit more fouls. He's a good defender. I trust Max Strus to play defense. Same conversation with Keon Ellis. Like, if I need a three hit, I'm trusting Max Strus over Keon Ellis. If I need defense played, that's pretty fair toss-up. I might take Keon in that fact, but he also fouls too much. Kenny realized that in the first series. I think Max Strus obviously picks up his fair share of fouls, but you're just going to take the experience and the overall player probably of Strus and the guy that you've been able to trust, been able to have a confidence in. But it's an overlapping skill set. I need wings. I need bigs. I need more guys to rotate in and out in a way to adjust my roster. But instead, it's just like, well, doesn't matter if the team that you're playing has a boatload of wings and they're tough to guard that way, because all the Cavs have is guard depth. And I mean, four or five of those guys, they barely even trust. It is just a continuous rotation of the same guys. It's where so much of this change has to be made. Again, 216-474-0092. Let's go back out to the phones. BP is in Pepper Pike. What's going on, BP?
Hey, Jake. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Doing well. You know, that was a great interview with Ethan Sands. You know, I've always had my eye on Jonathan Kuminga. I love his talent. I mean, he's the guy, he can jump out of the gym. He's exciting. You know what? If we can get Jonathan Kuminga on this team, I love it. Like, that's the kind of guy, we can develop him a little bit better. But he, I mean, he averaged 15 points against the Knicks coming off the bench in the playoffs for the Hawks.
Yeah.
This guy, I never know why I didn't work out with him in Golden State. I think, you know, he's got a high opinion of himself. I don't think he, you know, he didn't like taking a back seat to all the veterans out there. But this guy's got talent. If the Cavs, I've said yesterday on the Fan with the morning guys on yesterday's show with Daryl Ryder, I think Kobe Altman's on the hot seat. I don't think he's going to be fired, but I think he needs to come up with a game plan this summer. You know, I think he needs some results. I mean, I'm not trying to be, you know, horribly mean or negative, but, you know, I love the Cavs. I think they're on the cusp of winning, but they need, you know, they need some wing players that are 6'7" or taller. Jonathan Kuminga could fit that bill. So I think the Cavs should go all in. I actually know his agent. His agent is based right here in Orange, Ohio. And he went to Orange High School. So I know Kuminga's agent. He's a great guy. I think they're going to make it happen. So I think that's something that could we'll keep our eye on. But again, that's what we kind of need, an influx of some youth. You know, it didn't work out with DeAndre Hunter, but I think it could work out with Jonathan Kuminga, because I think he also wants to make it happen. You know, he's never really been a playoff player. He's never been counted on in a rotation, so I think he'll get a great chance here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great kind of move to make, BP, and I appreciate the call. Like, we're talking about a guy that is as much in his career, averaged, you know, 16 a game, definitely has the offensive prowess to be able to get it done. The Golden State stuff was obviously a really odd situation that I don't think any of us have fully understood. Again, I think you're right when you talk about a guy that might be a little full of himself, thinks very highly of himself, but there are just so many routes to go down. And I don't mean that as like you have so many options. I mean, there are only so many routes to go down. You don't have a ton of options if you're the Cavs. And it's because of deals like the DeAndre Hunter trade, where it's like, yeah, we think we have a great player. He is, you know, I mean, obviously not a defensive mastermind, but he is enough of a 3-and-D type player to be able to get a deal like that done, to be able to fill the role that the Cavs need. And it feels like every time you make those moves, Kobe's come out on the wrong end of them. Right, like there's not many trades, especially at that position, that Kobe has gone out and won. There's not many signings that Kobe has gone out and won when it comes to figuring out the wing. I can't sit here and vouch for the fact that Jonathan Kuminga is going to be the Hail Mary, all things good type of signing, but it is at least the way it feels like. The way that the Cavs are going to operate, one of the only avenues they can go down. This is the type of player that I think they should be pursuing about his, I mean, intensely as possible, right? It's great if you can go out and get a better player of this, but I don't know that you're getting a great player to play that wing, and you need help. Like, if you can find a way, again, I say I would move Max Strus. It's a big contract, frees up a lot of money. If I can do it, I'm going to do it. But if I can get Kuminga and Dean Wade back, and listen, I'm not the biggest Dean Wade guy. If I can get Dean Wade off my bench as a 6'9 defender, it's a good bench piece. He's just not good as a starting three. I can't trust him in the starting lineup. But if I can have both of those guys on my team, I have multiple wing defenders. I don't have to go without one in every single lineup. I think that's the way that the Cavs should be constructing their lineup right now. Their roster should be built that way. 216-474-0092. Jonathan Kuminga, does he fill what the Cavs need? Plus, we're going to talk about James Harden taking less money after declining his player option. The expectation, but does it change your opinion on him? It's coming your way in 5 minutes, right here on The Fan. Jake Volnick with the guys here on Overtime. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to get to Get a Grip, as we always do, at 9 o'clock. But we're talking Cavs, and you guys can jump in. 216-474-0092. And I want to know, James Harden obviously declining his player option today. And the expectation off of this is that James Harden is going to re-sign a multi-year deal, and it is going to be for less money than his player option was worth, which was sitting at right around $42 million. And the idea is that this gets the Cavs under the second apron, allows them to continue to make moves, doesn't hold them obviously in, what is a devastating spot of not being able to sign players for more than the veteran minimum, while sitting in the second apron. Also takes them out of the penalty of being a second-year, second-apron team, which is going to freeze a bunch of draft picks, freeze their ability to make trades, and basically put them in a corner where you're not allowed to make any sort of moves and the Cavs are stuck. I do think that this should... I don't want to say it should change opinion on James Harden, because there's obviously limitations that he has as a player. There's obviously things that he does really well, and there are obviously things that pop up in the playoffs that are going to drive us crazy. Right? Like, we saw those happen this year. But I do think that when you have a player attached to, hey, he's willing to take less money, he's willing to help you build this thing, I do think that goes a long way. Now, am I going to constantly this offseason flash back to James Harden on whatever podcast he was on talking about, I'm not willing to make sacrifices anymore, this is the type of player, I know who I am, I know what I'm capable of? Yeah, I'm going to do that. Am I going to be interested to pay attention to what the restructure, the new contract looks like for James Harden? I'm really interested. Because is this, hey, I'll help you get under the second apron, but I'm not going to help you make, you know, the ability to sign another player at $15 million. I'm not about to go out here and take, you know, $28 million this year just so you can have it, but I'll take, you know, $38 million so you can, you know, maybe sign one more player at $4 million. I don't know that that does anything for me either. There is an expectation. Like, James Harden gets held to, or James Harden does get held to a high standard. Same as Jared Allen. Jared Allen was making $20 million last year, and he gets talked about like the player that could get bounced off this team and not a single person would blink or care about it. Right? There are so many people on the train of get Jared Allen out of here. Obviously, that contract has now come and been worth more money. Now this year, I think it's sitting in the range of $28 million. The following year, it'll be north of 30. There are higher expectations that come with make more money. There are higher expectations when you are a 17-year NBA vet who has not missed the NBA playoffs. So, again, this shouldn't be something that drastically changes the opinion of James Harden, but I do think this is something where I don't know that's the type of player you should be looking. And I see people on social media going out and being like, oh, the Cavs need to move off of James Harden. They should just look to get rid of him. They shouldn't re-sign him, or they should sign and trade him. And it's like, I don't know that we understand the value of James Harden on the court. I don't know that we understand the value of James Harden in the trade market. Guys, it's about worth Darius Garland and a second-round pick at the trade deadline, may I remind you. While it was a relatively desperate move, you don't have a lot to actually gain from him in a trade. And I think you have a lot to gain that wasn't even necessarily displayed this year. Like, when we were talking to Ethan back at 8 o'clock, he brought up, you know, since the NBA-ABA merger, there's been one team to trade for an all-NBA-level player and then go on and win a title. And I'm not saying that, you know, James Harden is the fix and he is the solve, but there should be, I mean, at least a general understanding of that. There are things the Cavs need to be doing better around him. There are things that the Cavs roster building needs to be doing better around James Harden that I don't think this year they were set up to do. I mean, in multiple different ways, they were not set up to, account for the lack of defense that he provides. I think we say that exact same thing with Donovan Mitchell. And there are things that needs to change with James Harden. There are things that you need more out of him. You need more out of Donovan. But I do think that when you have him on a lesser contract, when he's willing to take less money to allow the Cavs to make moves, that is something that should be viewed in the positive. That is something that then should immediately reflect back onto Kobe Altman and be like, okay, if you are having players here, clearly the goal of James Harden is to win a championship. Donovan Mitchell's goal, win a championship. Like, I never question what the players on this team are actually striving for. They look desperate to win a championship. They look like they want to, or they talk like they want to, but at the same time, when I'm watching them play on the floor, it's like, you can say you want to. I believe in your heart of hearts you really do, but something has to be able to be there, and I don't know that I'm ever going to get the Donovan Mitchell in a Cavs uniform that is closing out hard on threes, in playing quick defense, in rushing to his spot. Like, I just don't know that I'm getting that guy, and I know I'm not getting that guy to James Harden. But I knew that when you went out and got Donovan, right? I knew that especially when you went out and got James Harden. I know what kind of player I'm getting on the other end. Your job as a GM is to then build around that. Either A, don't put those two players together, because that is a failing recipe. Right? You can say a lot of things about Darius Garland's defense. The one thing you're not going to be able to say about Darius Garland's defense is the idea that he's not willing or trying to go out there and play defense. He's just not good at it. He stinks. I've said this multiple times. He's a horrible defender. But he's giving a lot of effort there. I think James Harden is a better defender. I think low effort James Harden is a better defender than Darius Garland. I mean, he walks away. He makes, you know, turnover worthy plays on defense. He walked away from a game in the playoffs with 4 or 5 steals. That is not something that you would commonly see from Darius. But again, if you're Kobe, you know you're getting that James Harden. You know he's not going to go out there and play a high level of defense or high effort intensity defense. You need the rest of the guys too. So it's so much less of this for me reflects back on James Harden, reflects back on, oh, well, now I'm stuck with this player and he's not going to help us. No, James Harden is shown in his career, even away from the Rockets in his prime, to be a winning caliber player, either as the star or in a supporting role, right? He has not won a championship. He has not played to that level. I think we have seen levels of James Harden to help affect his team. Like, I mean, we joke about the Nets years and we joke about the Philly years. Obviously, that his Daryl Morey comments and everything else. You can go back to the Philly times where he was in the playoffs. He talks about, you know, taking a lesser role, being more of a distributor. We know James Harden is capable of doing that. Like, there are things he does really well on the floor. You need to do something to empower him to actually play that way. Again, part of that is helping him out on defense. Part of that is bringing in, you know, players to help him, you know, be better supporting pieces on defense, play a high intensity, force him to be the one liability on the floor defensively that is going to help you. And again, so much of it reflects back onto Kobe. You have to build that roster. You have to understand the type of players that you've brought in and what they need around them to succeed. And you have to go out there and build it. So I think so much about when James Harden takes a pay cut is not so much pressure on James Harden to succeed. Obviously, I think there's a lesser pressure getting paid less money to go out there and play. And I think so much of that pressure does have to reflect back onto Kobe. You have players who are obviously committed to winning. You have players that are willing to take pay cuts. I don't think Donovan's one of them. I think that's a guy looking for a $70 million contract or to find a new home in a year. I don't know which of those two ends up being true. Donovan seems to like it here. He seems to embrace the city. I don't doubt that he might want to play here again. But it is on you to then turn around and realize that Donovan's not taking a pay cut. You maxed out the contract of Evan Mobley. I would still say Jarrett's on a relatively team-friendly contract, probably closer to where he is market value right now than he was previously. He didn't take advantage of the cheap Jared Allen years. But it's so much more of the money you've been tossing around at players who have not been individually helpful for you, have not helped change the dynamic of your roster. And those are the type of guys that you need to then bring in. You have put yourself on a short timeline. It's now time to execute in the short timeline. So when I hear things about the Cavs not being aggressive, not actively pursuing free agents, not actively pursuing trades, that's where the real problem starts to come in. Kobe cannot just sit on his hands this offseason, roll back out the same roster. One, expect fan engagement and, you know, excitement to be high, because I don't think anybody is excited about this team running it back. And two, can't expect a different result. You want to put the exact same type of team back out there, even if some of the pieces change. Like, you're going out, and I don't even hate a Thomas Bryant signing for the veteran minimum on a one-year deal. Honestly, a good move. But like, and to Ethan's point earlier this hour, when you bring back Thomas Bryant and he played in half of your playoff games, often in garbage time or filling in for 5 minutes because somebody got into foul trouble, like, that's not really helping either. Like, you need to find guys on your roster that are worthy of playing, that are worthy of having in those moments. And if Thomas Bryant isn't one of them, again, it just feels like a move to keep me under the second apron. If it's not actually providing me front court depth, then what is the point of making the move? I just, everything in this offseason comes back. And obviously, it's going to be a highlight on the GM during this time of the year. But even as I sat there and watched the Cavs in the playoff last year, so much of the frustration and everything that we watched came back to Kobe Altman for me. And yes, I'm frustrated with James Harden. I'm frustrated with Evan Mobley. I'm frustrated by the players on the floor. But every single time I come back to it and people are like, well, they're not playing defense. They're not playing it hard enough. It's like, look at the roster you built. You didn't build a roster to play tough defense. You didn't bring in a coach to enforce them to play tough defense. You brought in a coach to help out the offensive game plan. You brought in a roster that is going to help offensively and not, you know, hide the weaknesses of your two guards who are not active defenders. Every single time it comes back to that, and every single time it feels like Kobe's just like, no, I believe in this team. They're going to change something. Like, I don't know how many times you have to watch the same team play over and over again to realize that they are A, limited, and two, not going to magically change on their own. It's why I get excited for players like Jonathan Kuminga, and I think it's an interesting move. It's why when we talk about Jaylen Brown, all of us jump immediately at the idea of how much that could help you. You have to take a look at players that can actually make a difference on your roster. And if you're going to have the ability, again, I'm staring at whatever the James Harden contract is going to be, especially for this upcoming season and the money and the number that's attached to it. If he is giving you the flexibility to go out there and sign a player, you know, $10 million or above, in today's NBA, that's still not worth that much. You are not getting a star player. Can you get Jonathan Kuminga on that number? I don't know, maybe. Like, maybe that opens up that move in particular, and you can do something, but so much of it comes down to, yes, you have to make a move. You have to do something. Whether that be trade Dennis Schroeder, trade Max Strus, you have to shake up the roster before you even have a chance, and we're sitting here with free agency open. We're watching players get traded. We're watching players, actively re-sign to their teams. And obviously you haven't gone out and, free agency hasn't officially really rolled on to where we're seeing players sign in different places and a ton of things, but you have to act quickly if you're Kobe Altman. You have to make changes, and you cannot wait on these. You have to be ready for when these moves are ready to be made, that you are front of the line, front and center, getting ready to make these deals happen and to improve the roster where it stands. And right now it just does not feel like the Cavs are there. 216-474-0092. Would Harden taking less money, the expectation almost certainly going to happen, does it change your opinion on him at all as how he fits onto this roster? Again, 216-474-0092. Plus, coming up here in 5 minutes, we get to Get a Grip, as we always do at 9 o'clock, right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.